This is Michelle Dawes-Burt of Real Chicks Rock, and this is RCR Presents Real Discussions, the podcast. Enjoy. Good afternoon and welcome to RCR Presents Real Discussions. I'm your host for today, Michelle Dawes-Burt. And as I always say, I'm always excited to be here. I give thanks for the opportunity to be here. And we wanted to be lighthearted in some regards because what we're going to talk about today is kind of heavy, right? So today's topic is all about how do we deal with mental illness, mental health, and raising the awareness. And I have two out of my three guests today that are very seasoned in that area. They're knowledgeable. They're passionate about it, and we're going to get to talk to them in just a minute. But before we jump into that, I just want to give those that are newly watching the show what Real Chicks Rock is all about. It's all about the empowerment of women. It's all women, and we do it through various different platforms and vehicles. We do it through community service. We do it through our apparel line, our t-shirt line. Thank for everybody that has been supporting the shirts for the past couple of years. We appreciate that. We also do it through mentoring and public speaking, and then we do it through the arts. While we were warming up, getting ready for the show, I was talking about my love for house music. And so that's where I see you. I know you from that. So, yes, I do a lot of things through the arts. I support, the culture, the dance, anything that I can do. And so now having the opportunity to have a talk show or internet radio show is a blessing. It's another way of supporting the arts and extending another vehicle or another way of what we do. So today, again, like I said, it's heavy. These beautiful women are here, and they've given up their Saturday and given up being, I'm sorry, their Sunday, given up being with loved ones today to talk about something that's kind of, that resonates with them. And so we're going to get into that. I want to introduce our guests. I'm looking directly to this face. Tell the nice people, speak into the mic. Tell the people who your name and who you are and a little bit about yourself.
My name is Sunny Brathwaite. I am a Grady baby. I like to start out.
Atlanta's own.
Let people know what's up. Yes, a native. We're rare.
Rare.
I don't know why, but here I am. And what I do right now currently is I do public speaking, mostly mm-hmm. with law enforcement, on how to not only identify when people have some symptoms that may be from a mental health challenge, but how to interact.
Wow.
And I share my own experience because I was diagnosed first. I'm 37.
Wow. Y'all know about that melanin. Yes. Nice. Nice.
Close to 40, y'all. When I was 16, I was diagnosed with severe depression.
Really?
And when I was 32, I was diagnosed with ADHD.
Okay.
So in between 16 and 37, mm-hmm. it's like 20 years.
Yeah, yes, yes.
I still think, like, when people say 90s is, like, old school, it really, like, makes my heart drop. Like, wait, hold up. Not yet.
Not yet. Yes.
Come on, y'all. 60s, 70s.
No.
I've been on really a journey with kind of accepting that. And I think the part that I speak to, no matter who I'm in front of, is that as a Black woman, all the training, Black woman who grew up poor in the South and grew up in Christianity,
yes.
that I had several barriers to actually accepting. Mm. I remember when I sat across from the therapist, it was because my mother's mom and her only sister had died. And so she put us automatically into therapy, and mm-hmm. she did something that was against the family code.
Right.
Nobody else was doing that. My
right.
mother grew up in the projects. Initially,
yes.
like nobody
yes.
was, you know,
yeah.
people thought we, you know, that's a crazy thing,
right?
right? Back then, probably mm-hmm. still today, it's a lot of people who think that way. And I remember the lady telling me I had severe depression. I really looked at her and was just like, you have no idea what kind of family I come from. I come from a line of strong Black women. I knew that she didn't know what she was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so 20 years later.
Right.
I'm here still managing depression, and I have definitely gone on a journey of embracing it. I've worked with other people mm-hmm. who we call peers who have mental health diagnoses after receiving some training.
Right.
And so I just see myself as an advocate
mm-hmm. awesome.
More than anything else.
Awesome.
So it starts with myself, because if I don't,
yeah.
you know, maintain my own truth about what's going on with myself, what I literally do is to actually reach out to people through that. So I have to maintain it so I can
awesome.
Maintain wellness. So that's a little blurb.
That's a nice yeah. blurb. And we're gonna dig into that blurb some more as the conversation continues. To my right, this beautiful newlywed, newly married, she's beaming. Erica, tell the people a little bit about yourself, your name, and a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Erica James Strayhorn. Yes. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist here in Atlanta. I have a private practice called Erica James Counseling LLC, located in Midtown Atlanta, where I see adults, couples, and individuals, and families. I also work with a nonprofit organization called Chris 180, where I work with children between the ages of 6 and 18. They are foster kids. They've experienced severe levels of trauma, and I help them get prepared for adoption or independent living, depending on how old they are.
Wow. Interesting. Very good stuff.
Yes.
So let's jump in because there's a lot. So we talk about, I think we use the term kind of loosely. I'm going to play the civilian real hard today, right? Because we don't know. And,
right.
And for those that can't see us, we are women of color. And so to Sunny's point, it's always been hard for us to understand what it is.
Right.
We had some green room conversation before the show even started. And there were some discoveries in that, you know, some people within the family culture, we just write them off as being crazy. Like, girl, pull yourself together. What's wrong with you?
Right.
So how do you define mental illness? I guess is the first stab at it. Sunny, I'm looking at you. How do you define that in your terms? Or
and I was looking at Erica.
We pass it? You want to go to Erica?
I can
go ahead, Erica.
Of course, there's like the technical definition.
Yes,
you can Google it. You can look it up in the dictionary. I prefer to have more of a personalized, my own kind of definition of mental health, mental illness. First of all, I prefer to talk about it as mental health or mental wellness instead of mental illness.
Okay.
Because I like to think about people from strength base.
So
what strength do they have? As far as all of us sitting here, any clients that might come into my office, the first thing I focus on are their strengths. So when I think about the definition of mental health or mental wellness, for me, it's when you have challenges with keeping your own personal status quo, your own personal balance. And that could be because due to childhood challenges, traumas, it could be things that may have happened in your adulthood, things that might happen at work, things and just triggers in your environment that might make some of these symptoms come up to the surface. But for me, it's more of a generalized balance. If you're able to kind of keep your mental health, your emotional health in balance with the rest of everything else you have going on, then I would say you're mentally healthy. It's when those things kind of get off balance and things are a little bit different or you don't really know how to manage. You know, simple challenges might be more challenging than they normally are. Things that you used to think about and let go, and now you're kind of perseverating on those thoughts and thinking about them over and over and over again. Things that used to make you sad, and you could be sad for a day, but now you're sad for like a long period of time. That's kind of when the mental health, the mental wellness kind of comes into play, as you might need some more support around those things.
And it sounds like, again, I'm a civilian, so I don't know. It sounds like, is it not a form of depression, or is it depression going up a notch, or help us?
For me, it's mental health and wellness is an umbrella, and things like depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, those things kind of come up under that umbrella.
Would you agree, Sunny?
Yeah, I really like your definition. I now have to look up the word perseverate. What was
perseverate?
That? Come on,
it means fixate. Fixate or have the
ruminate.
Same thoughts. Ruminate.
Yeah,
yeah, ruminate,
yeah.
Perseverate, they're the same thing. Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I was like, yes. I really like that definition because I think one of the things that was a barrier to me is that I didn't identify myself in the DSM, in the book, the manual, the Bible of how you diagnose. So things like symptoms basically that interrupt your ability to function either at work or in your relationships. So even though it's true, I think especially for people in general, but women and Black women, Black people and women specifically, that I like the definition about your personal kind of like almost environment, like kind of equilibrium, because the things that we identify sometimes, there is a spectrum even amongst people who have, I have a friend who has schizophrenia, and I got diagnosed with bipolar depression, which is a specific type, when I was 20 something. And so those are considered the more scary ones, right? So with those, people have a lot of, people, kind of like anger. Like yes. Anger is that emotion that pushes away.
Right.
Even though not necessarily shouldn't, but in our culture, that's what it does. Right. Same thing with schizophrenia, bipolar. Mm-hmm. With depression, low-grade anxiety, it's more of those kind of invisible ones.
Yeah, and those are more acceptable. Mm. More people kind of, they know more about them, and they think they may have experienced more people with depression or with anxiety, or they may experience those symptoms themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's something they're more comfortable with versus the other diagnoses, like you were mentioning, like schizophrenia, bipolar, those, like you said, those are the more scary diagnoses. Mm. Yeah.
To a degree. So mm-hmm. with the ones that are on that spectrum, then you have like people who have these very strong ideas of what they think that is. Right. And then with depression and anxiety, you have this kind of like, dismissal that mm-hmm. often comes with it, because depression is a word that's used for people who go through a short-term something, mm-hmm. but severe depression and clinical depression is its own type of beast. Mm. Yeah. And so the way that I do a definition of what mental health challenges are things that kind of interrupt your ability to your relationship with yourself, first of all.
Okay.
And then how you kind of interact with other people. So for me, depression is things that kind of literally how you described it, like, you know, not feeling people right now. Mm-hmm. So that's really isolation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have this kind of sense of like this weight as I move through the day. Mm. I might have had something happen. Now I'm able to identify triggers where before, because I come from a line of people, women specifically, who just keep going.
Right.
I didn't know that just because I can go to work and go to school and still have relationships that I still was actually having symptoms. So if I don't feel completely well, I think it's something to take a look at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. When you said a lot of good things, both of you ladies did. And it's a lot, because now you start to wonder about your own mental wellness mm-hmm. on a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis. Mm-hmm. A lot of us, and this is really scary, and this is real truth. There's a large population of us that are middle to low class income. So I'm mm-hmm. from the Bronx. Let's be all right. I'm projects. I was born and raised in the projects. Yeah. My project said NYCHA, New York City Housing Authority. Right. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on in that kind of environment that you just think is just part of the day.
Right.
And then there's other people that are not in the projects that it's just, it just seems like there's so many different ingredients that could trigger off your mental wellness.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm.
And I think that as humans, just human beings, regardless of your gender or culture, you are entitled, or you have every right to feel a certain way. I guess the issue is, if we stay in these states too long, or not able to, as Erica said, kind of balance it all out and bounce back out, like we deal with death, right? Unfortunately, death, and that's a very, you have a mourning period, you're very sad, you're missing that person.
Yeah.
Then we can't stay there, right? So we have to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And then typically, like what Erica says, it's, you know, it's the depression. We hear that. Then another term we're hearing a lot more now, bipolar, that thing. And so it's just so many for us as people of color. It's a huge opportunity to educate us. Because we, as you were saying, Sunny, we write things off.
Right.
We tell somebody, go pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
Real talk.
For good reason.
Good reasons.
I mean, good reason meaning historical reason.
Right. Yeah. Right. You went to church today, go pray about it. Yeah. You know, we'll get a prayer circle going. You all right. We always tell people, girl, you're gonna be all right. Mm-hmm. We say that, but we don't really know.
I think like the thing that's interesting to me is when I'm talking to law enforcement, there's a range of gender, ethnicity, and it's usually the Black women in the group who disassociate.
Right.
I don't know if that's the right word, because it's kind of like a clinical word, but they definitely kind of leave the room first. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I get these scowls when I start mentioning what I am. Like, I'm a Black woman. Like, I start with that experience. Right. And I say that because it does affect, like, everybody, especially that type of environment where you have that kind of, like, it's almost like a military.
Sure.
Like, you keep going, right? And then you'll see the actual issues. I think it's similar to me. To anybody who's on the front lines or is a first responder has that type of trauma thing. And then historically, the Black community does.
Right.
And so the way I kind of conceptualize is that if you list the number of things that we as a community in the United States have gone through, formal enslavement, Jim Crow, segregation, literally state-sanctioned violence. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, so at what time, if you're coming from a mental health wellness perspective, at what time do we take a break and say, let's now heal ourselves?
Exactly. Mm.
If you think about it from that way, mm-hmm. and then you, for me, and you kind of like project that into an individual thing, then it's a similar type of thing. If you've gone through one traumatic or you're just responding, at some point you're surviving and responding, mm-hmm. then at what point did you take care, because those things impact.
Sure.
Like, mm. you know, you might be able to function well. You may have not been right. wounded to a sense right. of having a wounded self.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
But like, you know, how, and then if prayer, which is important,
right.
right, for some people, and all the things that we use, if we didn't have access to a mental health setting,
mm-hmm.
then where does that go?
Yeah, you're right.
Where does it go?
Now we're functioning addicts. I don't want to say that. That's a strong word.
Well,
we're functioning beings like any other. And an addiction is very, that's the point I'm trying to make, but that's not the appropriate word, right? Because it's not really an addiction. You're not addicted to anything. It's just your state of where you are.
And I think we've kind of gone back to what you were saying with the complex trauma that we've gone through as a people.
Yes.
We also, I get a lot of clients in my private practice who've experienced complex trauma in their personal lives. A lot of grief, a lot of loss, a lot of abuse, a lot of trauma that as soon as one traumatic event happens, another one happens right after it. And then another one happens and another one happens. So they're learning how to function in these trauma states. When you've experienced trauma and when you're living inside of the trauma, your anxiety is up because you're always kind of watching your back. You don't know when the next shoe is going to drop, so to speak.
Right.
So you're always kind of living your life on edge. You're always living in a tense environment, a tense energy.
Right.
And it's not really until I even have my clients go through a timeline. I'll say, hey, let's make a timeline together where we list either the big traumas that you've experienced, the small traumas, or even those things that may not be considered traumas, but they kind of set your life on a different path than what you originally thought.
Mm-hmm.
And let's spend some time processing and grieving each of those things one at a time, because if not, you're going to continue to, as you go throughout your life, more traumas are going to happen, more circumstances are going to arise, and it's going to just continue to build on top of each other, and you're never really going to give yourself the chance to process or grieve those things if you don't try to find a way to kind of put a pause in it and really sit with yourself and walk through it and give yourself the time to process it.
It's very difficult, because what may be traumatic for Sunny is different for what's traumatic, for what trauma driven for me. And so, you know, I commend you ladies, Erica especially, because you have to be non-biased in your role and not be judgmental. Like, judgment is thrown clearly out. You're looking at a person based on where they are and what their weight is. I'm gonna borrow Sunny's word, what their weight is in their life. And so for you to be able to maneuver through that is tough in itself.
It's very
difficult, because just me, I consider myself to be balanced, but there are times that I'm not. But there's phases in our lives as women, most of us, that we go through this insecure period, and we're very sensitive to things and rejection and all these kind of things.
Just
in general, just going, you're trying to be funny. compounded plus over years, but just dealing with life.
Right.
There are some of us that struggle in relationships. We can't get out of that mechanism. And we deal with depression or anxiety differently. And so you don't know what happens to that person. You don't know what it is that you need to do to kind of, shake yourself out of it.
Yeah.
But it's a very thin line. And the older you get, or the more life experiences come at you, because age is nothing but a number. Now we're just dealing with life experiences. It can get heavier. So now, do we, as we interact with people and we want them to be on a path of mental wellness, are some of the antidotes for them changing their garden or circle of friends? An influence? Is that something that we say?
I completely agree with that.
Okay.
When I first get a new client, one of the first questions I ask them is, what does your support system look like?
Right.
Some of them say they have a support system. Some say they don't.
Right.
But then I really try to allow them the space to understand, like, hey, maybe the environment that you're mm-hmm. in is part of the reason why you're not able to move on to the next level mm-hmm. or move through this particular phase in your life. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think that a lot of what people experience, or some of what they experience, yes. has a lot to do with their environment, who they spend their time around,
right.
What kind of music they listen to, mm-hmm. what kind of places they go to, right. what kind of foods they eat. Mm-hmm. Environment plays a really big role on people's mental health, for sure.
Now, for you, Sunny, you opened up by saying, You come from a line of very strong women in right. your, so
and it, the idea of the strong black woman
and the idea right. okay,
so that's the thing I was right I didn't know that needed challenging.
Okay,
so the idea that you could, I thought depression was a rich white woman's disorder. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I didn't have any reference.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there were several women in my family who about the age of 30 had what they call breakdowns.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
you know what I mean?
Okay,
that's
okay.
what it was called, a nervous breakdown.
Sure. Down. But, yeah,
you know, it was kind of seen as a life response event to like
okay.
being more of the caretaker for the children, mm-hmm. having really lit relationships with mm-hmm. men. Like, mm-hmm. you know, that's the way that it was viewed.
Okay.
So they had full on breakdowns when I can now label as possible depression mm-hmm. or, you know, a bipolar or manic episode, mm-hmm. you know, so looking back, I can see that, but mm-hmm. like that idea kind of, it strengthens and it also can put you on a platform where you don't get what you need.
Right,
sure. Because
right.
the strong black women never talk about it in the sense of what do you need?
Ooh.
What can you do?
Ooh.
Right?
That's
and
a show.
For others.
That's another topic.
And I also think that it impedes our ability to be vulnerable.
Yes.
Because when you think of strength, a lot of times it's like, okay, I'm strong. I can't let my emotions show.
Right.
I can't sit down and cry right now. I have
right.
to pick up where I'm going to
keep
it moving and keep my game face on.
Yeah.
And then that's a barrier to us, men and women, mm-hmm. to being able to feel comfortable enough with expressing our vulnerability and then understanding that there's tremendous strength in vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
But when this notion of the strong black woman is the only thing that you see, that's the only image you see mm-hmm. on TV and the radio and the media, and they don't really show the other side, that strong black woman can also be very vulnerable.
Right.
She can also be someone who asks for help, but that part of it is not really
talked about.
Yeah,
because
it's not profitable.
Exactly.
Now we talking about the money.
It isn't. I mean, just profitable society-wise,
yes.
like social capital.
Yes.
Because when we were having a conversation on the way in about that invisible labor.
Yes.
Like doing this kind of work.
Right, right.
And the work that comes with community activism.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
That silent kind of stuff that a lot of times gets laid on particular gender and a particular, you know, cultural group.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. But to not take care of yourself is something that's learned from the beginning, right? Of the American experience in our lives, in my opinion.
Yes.
That's a little political.
Yeah.
To bring it back to a little more groundedness about cultural lifestyle management to deal with mental illness. I was diagnosed at 16. So I was very eclectic, I guess. I don't like to use that word, but I think that's how people see me. I don't know. But which to me is just saying weird or something, but I'll take it. And so I thought of myself as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of myself as my mother, because she came from a family of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just gonna leave it right there.
Right.
She went the other way. Like, she would make us this nasty candy. Like, it was called Horehound candy. It was some herbal something. Now I can appreciate it, but back then, she's like, can we get an aspirin, please? She was that, you know, against drugs.
Yeah.
And so I kind of, like, didn't want to do any kind of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to work out. I wanted to, all the things, this lifestyle management, support system, working out, meaningful activities, exercise, nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that you manage. But I thought that was treatment.
Mm.
And that's the distinction I want to make. Like, for me, I'm thinking if I can get that perfectly down, but I didn't, the physical component of even depression, it can be a biological, it's a brain issue.
Yeah.
So I struggled for years because I saw myself as this artist who just needed to be able to maintain better.
Right.
I needed to make sure that my vegetables were organic or all I had to do. So it was almost like a perfectionism thing. And I didn't want help. So I now see it. 20 years later,
right.
it's something that requires both.
Okay.
What are the things I can do for myself?
Yeah.
What are things that I need assistance with? Whether it's a herbal remedy, a prescription drug, therapy has been very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like this idea of the strong kind of, not just black women, this culture kind of
does
this thing with vulnerability. Like, I posted this thing today, I think, or yesterday, I'll be up like at 2, but that's, that's another, we'll talk about that because that's a symptom too. I posted this statement that a Facebook friend had said, the only kryptonite to emotional ghost is vulnerability.
Mm.
And so I was just like, yes.
Nice. Nice.
You know, to just kind of really keep rewiring my thoughts yes. about what's supposed to happen when I'm experiencing something. Because there's a pride mm-hmm. and a shame yes. that comes with
saying. An embarrassment yeah. kind of thing.
And I have found that speaking what's true for me, and I want to use law enforcement again, because that's the culture that you think of with like bravado and like definitely don't show emotion. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And I have had several, without fail, almost every time I've spoken with law enforcement, someone comes and has a emotional connection and tells me their story.
Right.
In a thing where they have to be a lot of times secretive.
Yes.
They will take, some people have taken me to the end of the parking lot. Like the head of departments have taken me.
Yeah.
Can I speak to you out? And it's just kind of whispering.
Yes.
So I can only imagine if it's my experience, mm-hmm. then the people who are doing this service, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then everybody needs it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like everybody needs some kind of access to what it is that maintains wellness. It might not be a disorder, but mental wellness itself mm-hmm. is still something that's kind of like underneath physical wellness.
Yeah. It has embarrassing tendencies. That's what we put on it.
A lot of stigma.
Because right,
a lot of people feel that the only reason why you need to go to a therapist is because, for lack of a better term, and I know this is a trigger word, but they feel like they only need to go to therapy when they're crazy.
Crazy.
And people don't understand that, yeah, you can go to therapy when you have your typical stressors, when you have a hard time at work, when you feel stressed about a project coming up, when you just need to vent to somebody who doesn't know you so you can get a subjective opinion from them, or objective. I always confuse those two. So it doesn't have to be because you feel like you're about to have a nervous breakdown.
Right.
It could be just to manage your day-to-day life. I have plenty of clients who come in and they just sit and vent for an hour.
Yeah.
And that's it. But then I have other clients where I'm giving them homework assignments. I'm giving them tools.
Right.
We're going through and talking about childhood challenges. We're really doing some of that more processing.
Right.
So it kind of depends. But I think a lot of the stigma is because, like you were saying before, a lot of it comes from people who have a heavy religious background, and they don't understand that you can be religious and you can do therapy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I often integrate those two.
Mm.
If I do have a client who is spiritual, if they believe in, you know, whatever religion they believe in, you can bring that into the session. Let's figure out how we can use that together with therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of that stuff is really important. All of it comes together. That's what helps people create their whole self. It's not just one piece here and one piece there. How can it all work together? But yeah, I really do think the stigma, a lot of the stigma is because people are afraid they're going to be judged or looked at or feel embarrassed because they're being seen by a therapist. Mm-hmm. And really, that's not what it is at all.
Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity to educate the masses, and that's what we're doing. We're going to take a little break.
Already?
Oh, yeah. We're going to take a little break.
Okay.
And we're going to be, when we come back, I'm going to have my third guest. They're here, so we're excited. We're going to change up the logistics a little bit, but we'll be back in a few minutes. We'll be back. This is part two. And yes, you're not going crazy. We have another person. That's Kay. This is Kay Wolf. Kay has joined us. Kay, tell the people a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to jump back in the conversation. Go right ahead.
Sure. My name is Kay Wolf, and I was diagnosed with bipolar 1, which is the... talking to Sunny about that, the fun bipolar.
What does that mean, Kay?
It can be very extreme. If you've seen the movie, I think it's called Brain on Fire. It really illustrates how explosive it can be. What I mean is like the explosive creativity, the explosive mood swings, even explosive neurological abnormalities, anomalies, rather, such as hallucinations, auditory hallucinations, visual hallucinations, paranoia. It's not. It's going to be fun.
Ooh.
Life gets a little trippy.
You were saying some things to us when you arrived here. So how long have you been having mental challenges?
When I looked back at my life history, I noticed that there were some things that began when I hit puberty.
Mm-hmm.
When I was nine, puberty pretty early. And it just progressed and progressed. I remember the height of it when I was an adolescent was when I was 13.
Okay.
And that's when I began damaging myself.
Really?
And I hadn't talked to my parents about it. I hadn't really processed it, you know, and stuff that I saw in the movies or things I read in books, fiction books, was just like, oh, you know, this is a normal part of adolescent, you know, whatever. And it really got to a extreme, I wouldn't say plateau, but it really became extreme in college.
Okay.
And I know that that happens to a lot of kids. I don't know if it's just the stress, the diet.
The environment, new
the
environment.
And crazy sleep schedules. But it really hit hard when I was about 22, 23. And I didn't get an official diagnosis until my life was in a huge point of transition, and things began to, I'm not going to say fall apart, but there was a huge life transition. And that was, gosh, that was about, I'm gonna say five years ago, 4 years ago.
Okay.
I went to, well, I'll give some context. I had a friend who is in mental health. She's a therapist. And she came to me very authentically and said, there is something wrong. I know you. I know your lifestyle. I know you exercise, you eat well, you meditate, you, you know, do yoga, you're spiritual. I know that she knows, she knew me so well. She knew what kind of natural supplements I took.
Right.
She,
right.
She's been in my kitchen before. And we've had those conversations about nutrition and vitamin supplements and everything that help maintain mental health.
Yes.
And she said, there is something wrong. You need to go get help. She said, you know, go to Emory. They have a one of their top psychiatrists. This is his name. Go see him. I went, had a 2-hour intake, and they interviewed family members. And he said, you have most severe form of bipolar.
Wow.
With some anxiety, and given your history that, you know, that you've told me it started around puberty. So once I received that diagnosis, there was some apprehension at first. I was like, oh, maybe I need to get a second opinion. And some of my family members were like, you should go get a second opinion.
Right.
I got a second opinion, and they confirmed that, no, really, you, we need to do something now to maintain your mental health.
Okay.
Because with mental challenges, I like to say challenges instead of illness.
We're learning. We're learning. I'm learning.
Mental illness is very disempowering.
Okay. That's what Erica was saying earlier. So, yes.
It's, it requires being enabled. I'm not going to call it a handicap. It requires being enabled. But I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
We were talking about,
you're saying you just got your diagnosis after the second opinion.
Yeah, right. And it, it was a relief. At first I was apprehensive because I was like, you know, great. I've got this. I got to keep it a secret. I only told like a couple really close friends. I was embarrassed about it. I felt, disempowered at first, but eventually it became a huge relief to know that, oh, wow, I have this challenge. It has a face to it now. That means that I can come up with solutions. I can get the appropriate support team to come up with solutions, come up with tools, and get the, like I said, appropriate support system so that I can maintain my mental health.
When we have mental health challenges, is medication an option? Does the people that we see that says, listen, you have a serious form of this, this, and this, do they also introduce a form of medication at that point or no?
It was my psychiatrist at the time thought it was absolutely necessary to put me on medication, just because of the severity of the symptoms that I was having. It was affecting my, overall capacity to function. It was affecting my family relationships. And it was affecting how I was experiencing life in an adverse way. But like we were saying earlier, it's the fun, you know, it's the fun disease. So there are those moments where, I mean, my brain was literally high because of the neurochemical imbalance and the misfiring. I mean, there really is a science behind mental abnormalities.
Awesomeness, man.
Because it's... It can be measured on, I think it's not an EKG, MRI.
Okay.
It can be measured by chemical, neurochemical levels being tested. Mm-hmm. I went to a naturopathic, holistic physician. He was a medical doctor. And he tested my blood levels for dopamine, serotonin, neuroserotonin, and it was bottom out. It was in the red.
Wow.
I had none of that going on, so I forgot what I was saying.
Well, I think that's important about for you to name those, because there's the first questions I get is, what happened?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You did something, right?
Well, you know, people don't necessarily know. So when I'm in that position of talking to an audience, I don't take things personally.
Yeah.
So people say that when I accept it as that they're saying
we don't know.
They say it different ways, but what they're saying is like, is it physical? Is it, you know, your childhood?
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. So some people are really turned up about it. You know, some people really ask it in this very diplomatic way, but it's the same under thing. And the theory that I'm most familiar with it, it can be a combination of things.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that I like to kind of point out the physical component, because it kind of takes away from this idea that you could just lifestyle yourself into it.
Yeah,
That's literally one of the, it could become a delusion,
right?
It could be, especially with bipolar, my experience of it and having peers and friends who have it, there's this idea of like, because the world is so internal and it's so individual, like you don't want to necessarily... And a lot of people who have bipolar disorder, as well as ADHD, have a high creativity and highly spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the correlation scientifically is there. Not for everybody.
Yes.
But that's like, so the line between, am I just very creative right now, or am I having a hallucination?
Right, you know? Right.
And it feels similar as far as like the energy and the what you get from being in the creative process. So as far as the neurotransmitters, I think that's so important because it gets read as something must have happened to you, and it could have as a child. Because a lot of us experience dysfunction as children, but not everybody's brain is affected.
Exactly.
Right? So that's the difference in it, because me and my sister were raised in the same household. My sister doesn't have bipolar disorder.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So it's this kind of thing that I think is so important to know that there's several different, lack of a better word, causes. It's not really, I don't like to say that word.
Yeah.
You kind of take it as like cause and effect. But kind of like things that are the building blocks to why you are having challenges. So some of it is family history, your experiences as a child, definitely the chemical aspect of it, right? Because that's the part that I struggle with. I don't want to be on drugs, you know, like, nobody's going to drug. I don't care what it is. A substance, a person, a thing, an object is not going to control me.
Right.
Right. Which is another characteristic I see a lot with my friends or people who have bipolar disorder. This idea of like control is important. Because if the thoughts and your feelings, which are, we're told is by the society, is how we identify ourselves.
Yes.
You identify yourselves by what your thoughts are.
Right.
What your feelings are.
Right.
If those things you can't always trust,
then
it's control becomes important.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah. It's very, very important at that point. I'm always selfish with the guests, and I got to stop that. Anana Harris Paris, thank you for shouting, blowing us up on Facebook. She is sharing and going woohoo and thinking this conversation is awesome. Again, the topic today is how do we deal with mental health. I've learned when I'm not using illness anymore. I got some hashtags out there. I'm going to go change them, right? Get rid of it. And it's more about mental wellness, challenges, opportunities, but we want to put in everything. There's got to be some good that comes out of it. And so I've learned in this first hour of our conversation that regardless of what's going on, we want to be able to give people the empowerment, the strength that they need to one, identify what it is, and then give them the tools that they need or strategies to get out of it. So this is really, really good conversation and information to have. Kay, one thing we talked about while you were on your way here, and we missed you. We were talking about, I'm engulfed by three beautiful people here, and this is awesome.
Look at that reflection. Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We were talking about, and I wanted to save this question for all of us to chime in on it. It's like for us as people, women of color, our culture, it's like we're one extreme to the other, right? We're either like, really having a difficult time or areas economically, socially, this, that, and the third, yeah. or society. I'm using some of the stuff that Sunny was talking about has put us in a totally different area or stratosphere. So people think we turn up all the time. We are about weaves, big booties, this, that, this whole nother image. How do we get this where we are in the middle? Like, this is a tangible thing that we're talking about. This isn't something that you guys made up. Right. Like, you weren't seeking someone's attention or approval. Mm. This isn't things that just happen to you and you're stuck. You're not, you're owning your feelings. You're owning what's going on in your being, in your person. How do we raise that vibration and the awareness for other people to own it? And Erica said it as well. You said it too. Once you guys know what it is, you feel like this, like, I'm not crazy. There's something a little chemically off. That's a very good word, because there's a chemical imbalance. Right. So how do we raise that? I'm looking at Sunny, but anybody can answer.
I'm popping for this one.
Go ahead.
I think the important thing for me was, like, when the first time I was in a counselor's office, I was around 16.
Yes.
That's when I got diagnosed. I think it was 14. My mother had lost her mother and her only sister in the same year. And my grandmother was the backbone of the family.
Right.
So my mother was the last sister. So that really changed our dynamic.
Right.
Because my mother was, my dad, we saw him every other weekend. So he was definitely, it was a two parent raising, but my mother was a primary parent.
Okay.
She might as well have been a single parent in some ways, right? As far as the work.
Okay.
And so we found her, like, I remember one time she was, you know, she had just buried her mom and her sister.
Mm.
And I'm 14 and I see my mother behaving in ways I could not understand.
Right.
Not the woman who made all these decisions and took care of stuff and always, you know, knew what to do and all these. And so she put us in counseling. And sitting there with, like, these symptoms, ask these questions. Do you ever, you know, get sad sometimes? Do you ever feel a sense of emptiness? Mm-hmm. I still don't understand exactly what that, I know I do, but that's not, I didn't relate to any of the way. It took me to being, you talked about going to a group. It took me to going to a support group where the way I described, which I thought was my own individual, you know,
uniqueness. Yes.
Yeah. These people were saying the same thing. And I literally cried, which I don't do. I don't do it. I learned how not, you don't cry in public, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm bawling because I was like, it took, 10 years for me to sit in this group to realize that those symptoms that were listed in that therapeutic environment were, I was actually experiencing, but I had distance from it because it was a clinical environment.
Now, here's the key. What made you go to a support group? How did that happen? That's the key.
That's the story.
Okay.
Okay. I do want to put this out here real quick, because that story I can make it real summary. I can do Cliff Notes version.
That's fine.
But that's interesting that you asked me that. I had come back from, I lived in California for 5 years. Mm-hmm. I was in the Bay Area on a manic episode. I didn't know. I didn't tell anybody until I got there. I had no clue. I didn't have a real plan A. It wasn't settled. So my plan B and C was actually my A. And I stuck it out. I was there 5 years, and I went to New York for a year to go to school there.
Yes.
And my aunt, who, my last year of high school, I stayed with her until I was about 24. She was my great aunt. And I always told her if she got sick, I would come back.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back to Atlanta. She got ill. She had dementia. And I came back and I took care of her. I didn't realize a couple of things. I thought dementia was just forgetting things.
Right.
I didn't realize the aggression and the regression and all the stuff that comes with that. You know, she would cuss me out because she had that good Southern, like, for real, like, to the bone. I'm like, I'm here helping you. She thought I was an intruder, all that stuff. So I had my own mental health stuff, and hers was challenging mine because it wasn't set in what people would identify as a reality, right? She had her own reality. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of triggered my stuff to kind of really get my own independence. And I had this, I was 32 and I diagnosed at 16, didn't really taken on completely. I had bits and pieces of owning it, right?
Right.
32, I had a crash. At this point, I was doing the right nutritional stuff. I was walking. I had all the components. So at that point of after having three or four crashes, I'm like, something else
is not right.
Is going on. Mm-hmm. Because I have mastered the things that you're supposed to lifestyle management master. And here I have had a full on breakdown. And I get on the bus at that time because I came, I sold my car. And I get on a bus and this lady happened to be going to a support group meeting. And I had plans to go the other direction. I literally went with her and I sat in the meeting. So it was kind of like, and I'm definitely not a religious person. Let me put it like that, mm-hmm. you know. But that was definitely some type of intervention.
Okay.
So I sit in this meeting and it was a NAMI meeting, National Alliance for Mental Illness, which is now the yes. group I work for.
Yeah, NAMI.
Yes, right? Mm-hmm. Very... We should talk about that because I have several resources I want to make sure that people
yes.
get a hold on.
Okay.
And I sat and that's how I did it. Like I had no clue. I was just telling her, you know, I don't know why I'm even talking to this lady. Mm-hmm. Right. New York will teach you not to talk to people.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So I don't know.
That's how we raised.
Right.
Don't talk. Like, don't look at nobody.
I didn't get it until after I was there for a month. Cause I'm just like, look at these people. They're entertaining. Nobody wants to even look at them.
Mm-mm.
A month later, I'm like, I don't see you, right?
Right,
it's
right.
Every day. 5 times a day. So, you know, you get used to it. So I came back and I don't know what inspired me, but it was obviously meant to be. And she said, come with me.
Mm.
And I was in the midst of a full out crisis.
Wow.
For me, which meant that I might not eat for, I don't know, when's the last time I ate, mm-hmm. last time I got out of bed.
Yep.
Only things that could move me out of that was something that I was accountable for.
Right.
And, you know, and
right.
even that was a struggle. So I don't know where I was going, but I went with her and I sat in this meeting and people were saying the same kind of things. Nobody's saying I have a sense of emptiness. They would talk about this kind of like, I'm drained again. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like,
Kay, tell us, Kay, come on.
Yeah. I can resonate with everything yes. you're saying. There are, even with, medication regulating
yes.
a lot of the neurochemical balance, there are moments where something small can just boop, mm-hmm. yeah. knock me off of my my rhythm.
Mm.
And
that's
once that
word.
Happens, it takes a while to get back on track.
Mm.
There have been moments where I stayed in the bed for like a week
mm-hmm.
and I could barely take care of myself
mm-hmm.
Because of my challenges and change in life circumstances. I moved in with my family, moved into the family house August 2012.
Okay.
So I've been there because I have a little one.
Okay.
And there is an accountability that I have to myself to mm-hmm. Take care of her
right.
and be responsible for caring for her. And I know that in the back of my mind, it's a little more humbling than I care to be,
mm-hmm.
you know.
That's loaded. I like that word.
Yeah. However, it's living with in the family house with my family's been, you know, I don't know where I would be right now.
Right.
There were moments where I thought, you know, oh my God, there's no way I can be a parent. Especially soon after my diagnosis, I thought, oh my God, I'm damned.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm going to screw my child up and I can't do this.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where I really considered giving my mother custody
mm-hmm.
of my daughter, who's
wow.
now 6 and a half.
Wow.
Because I was afraid I couldn't function.
That's real.
To really take care of her and to carry on that responsibility on top of being responsible for myself.
That's heavy.
But there have been times where, you know, just a week in bed.
Yes.
It just, there was nothing that the house could have been on fire and I'd probably still like, okay.
So right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But the inner, I mean, we just met a week ago.
We did. Yes. I was talking about this amazing trip to China, which I'll talk more about.
So I had no idea because you walk in, you're this burst of light and your daughter is like twice your light.
Yeah.
Right? She's twice your light.
Her middle name is Aurora.
You know, it's beautiful. See?
Yes.
And I didn't know that. And I don't know. So I'm looking, I'm like, and you shared with me, you know, that you're struggling. And I was like, because you don't look, and I'm being ignorant as most people are.
That's important.
It's a look. We're thinking you should be downtrodden. You should be looking a certain way, right? Like people should look like they have HIV. It's like, mm-hmm. you should look like there's something wrong. And I'm like, no, my goodness. And so from a mother, cause I'm a mom too. Do you feel that sometimes there's something inside of you as a mom that says, I can't give up on her. I got to get up. Did that help in some cases for you or no?
Yes. And when I said, you know, like a week in bed, I was not eating. I wasn't hydrating.
Right.
I wasn't showering. I wasn't practicing any hygiene. But I'd be damned if I wouldn't take care of my child.
I heard that.
So I would
get
out of bed, if not only to feed her breakfast and take her to school.
Wow.
And then crash back out. So, you know, the house could be on fire as long as my child wasn't
is
in the
okay.
house.
Yeah,
the motivation to get up would be like, maybe it'll go out in a little bit.
Right. Yeah. And your baby girl, she's very mature, full of life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does she know that mommy struggles with mental wellness at times?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up. There was a moment where I was like, you know, nature versus nurture. Mm-hmm. And there's a combination of the two to maintain mental health, and not just maintain it, but introduce mm-hmm. a child at early age to mental health. So I got a series of books that were specifically for children, as well as an audio CD specifically for children.
You're not playing.
Yeah, I this is the book. Wishing Wellness. That's one of the workbooks for children of parents with mental illnesses, but I like to say mental challenges, and that's how I teach my daughter.
Yeah.
But yeah, I educated her. Absolutely. It was essential for her to understand what's going on with mom, because there is nothing worse than being in a situation that can be scary sometimes and not knowing like what is this, what's going on. So now that she can identify it, I went so far as to borrow a cousin of mine is in mental health field, and I borrowed his binder of the science behind mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the photos of brain scans, and it goes into depth about neurochemical imbalance, neurochemical makeup. And my daughter is very biology oriented, very science oriented. Mm-hmm. So I went through that entire thing with her and I was like, okay, here are the neurochemicals. This is, you know, the part of the brain that has, you know, challenges, the frontal lobe might, you know, it has executive functioning. And when that's out of whack, this can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And she absorbed it and she completely understands it. Also, part of this workbook is identifying when mom might be stepping into a period of depression or might be manic. So, and as also a guide for what she can do when she's feeling unsafe. If I'm having really severe agitation and needing to go somewhere and calm down, she has a little plan for her where she says, okay, I need to go be in my happy place. So she'll go in her room and she'll lock her door and she'll read.
Right.
Or she will, there's a house phone where she can go pick up a phone and talk to an adult. If she feels like, oh, mommy's getting really agitated.
Right.
And I mean, I've never gotten to a point of being physically dangerous or
anything
like that.
That's good.
But as a little child, a 6-year-old,
that's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If mom starts getting loud and looking frantic and being stressed out about every little thing, that's going to be scary for a little one.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that she's armed with information or empowered rather with information and knowledge about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
She has a support system. She can pick up the phone and call whoever, you know, she usually calls, one of her grandparents or uncle or dad and says, you know, hey, I just need to talk because I'm feeling a little stressed out about mommy's behavior right now.
Yeah.
So she's very aware, and I credit her awareness and her empowerment to my effort
yeah
to make sure that she has what she needs to,
I'm going to make sure my child is okay, regardless. I want to talk a little bit about the family unit, because a lot of us as African Americans, once we leave home, we can't go back. Regardless, I'm keeping it 100. Like, regardless of how, whatever it is, it's very few parents that are able to take on us and our children based on our life experiences or challenges or opportunities. Even maybe it's the environment, maybe it's financial, maybe it's just where we are in life. We're bringing just way too much on them at this phase in their life. So I want to commend your family, because you said, absolutely, you know, that they since 2012, so it's been like almost 5 years. So does mom and dad and the family outside of your daughter, they know their roles, they have scripts and processes that they need to, how does that work for you? How does it work for them?
I tip my halo to them.
Yeah.
I put them through a lot of ish.
That's okay. It was unintentional. It wasn't on purpose.
Right.
It wasn't on purpose.
No, not at all. So the family dynamic there, at first, my parents were like, okay, you know, you need to get it together and make an exit plan, you know, so that you can, you know, get your life back in balance and then go
hit the bricks.
Yeah. So when I shared with them the diagnosis and showed, you know, after, you know, the second opinion and the charts for the neurochemical imbalance that showed like I am bottomed out. As well as, you know, educating myself on the challenges and educating my parents. It took a little while for them to acclimate and adjust, adapt to, okay, life is going to be very different now. And I like to say they tolerate me for the sake of my daughter. But the dynamic there is, it's very beautiful. Sometimes it can be a little bit, you know.
Right.
Okay, this girl, just give her some space. Go, you know, why don't you go out and spend time with your friends, or go exercise, or go veg out, go do something, just go.
Right.
We got, you know, we've got Kayuma, you just go. But there are moments where, you know, one of my parents will say, you know, you're a little agitated. Have you taken your medication? And, sometimes they're, you know, legitimate, questions, and other times I get irritated because I'm like, okay, this is a normal reaction. You know, this is a normal response. This has nothing to do with that.
So everything gets automatically boxed into that quadrant, right?
Not anymore. Initially it did. And then after a few, you know, just logical conversations with my parents, it's like, oh, okay. All right. That question can be irritating. And so now it's like, you know, like I said, they're just like, go have some you time.
You know,
you got a lot on your shoulders. Just go take care of yourself for a moment. But yeah, we have a very comfortable situation for which I'm grateful. There's plenty of space for everybody to have their own space and have their own corner. And, you know, Kayuma and I have a suite, in the basement, so it's pretty self-contained. You know, if we need to go off and all right, you know, we need to dig.
That's cool.
To take some time, then, you know, we can go there. And
awesome.
Everybody's
is nice okay.
And chill.
Yeah. Everybody's okay. So that's good. All right. I'm going to take a little break. Yeah, look at Sunny's face. She's excited. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about how to deal with mental wellness. Don't you like that? The panel says, yes, we like the wellness. We're going to talk about mental wellness, the tools that you need, who do you reach out to, how do you stay in contact with these ladies, all that good stuff when we come back. Welcome back. back. RCR Presents Real Discussions. This is part three of how we deal with mental wellness. I've changed the topic, the title of the topic, just like that, because I've been empowered and I'm learning, and this has been really, really good. I have three beautiful people here today that have been extremely transparent with their journey. And for that, we thank you. I thank you personally for that, because that's going to help a lot of people. Because again, as people of color, we don't realize what we don't know. We just don't know. And our environment typically categorizes us, boxes us, shuts us down, quiets our spirit. And we don't deal with what we need to deal with. This is not someone, being crazy or looking for attention. There's something that's inside of us that's provoking or causing the mental challenges and the mental wellness that we desire, that we want to have. And so I thank you ladies both for just being transparent. Kay, I'm going to ask you, because I don't think I was clear in the ask. Sure. At what point did you realize you needed to get some form of help? Was it dad? Was it mom and dad at that time and saying, we got to get her some help because there's something off? Or when did it happen for you?
You know, there were great question. Thanks for asking, Michelle. Mm-hmm. There were several moments that, family, friends were like, you should go get this checked out. They're a really good friend of mine who, during a crisis, I had like a full on manic, I'm trying to think of a good example. This delusion that basically my whole world was falling apart because somebody forgot to take the dog out to go potty. And this was several years ago. This was back in, I would say 2010. And a friend of mine said, you need to go to hospital right now because you're having a crisis.
Okay.
I said, I'm not having a crisis. This is everybody else's fault. You know, somebody didn't do this and I'm just angry.
Right.
And then there were moments when I was early on, about, I want to say 15, 16, and my parents said, okay, there's something wrong. Let's take you to a therapist. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I said this on air, but I remember saying this offline to you guys. Mm-hmm. There were moments when my dad thought I was on drugs. Mm-hmm. And I was like 13, 14. And he and my mom would constantly, do these sporadic raids in my room and take everything out and look around. They thought maybe I was into occult.
Right.
Wicca or something like that, because I would burn candles in my room and I would act really weird, unusual and imbalanced. So that, like I said, there have just been these little periods where, okay, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Go check it and then, go get checked out, address it, and then, leave it alone.
Right.
And a cousin of mine who's in mental health actually, it's about, the early part of 2012, told me to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. I went to the hospital because I was having a mental breakdown and they said, oh, you're fine. They didn't give me any medication. They just sent me home and said, well, call these people in the morning and make an appointment. And I called to make an appointment and they're like, well, we don't have any openings for several months out. And I was like, whatever. And I left it. And, sure enough, about 6-7 months later, stuff just blew out of the water.
Wow.
So it took a good friend of mine really looking at me and like holding me by the shoulders, looking at me in the eye and saying, there is something wrong. Mm-hmm. There's really, really something wrong. And it wasn't like a kind of a something over the phone call over the phone or, a casual thing in person where people say, you might want to go get this checked out. Mm-hmm. Something's wrong. It was a very direct, extreme, but it was very powerful concern.
Yes.
Almost as to say, there's something that's about to, completely fall apart for you. You're at a turning point. You better go get help.
You better get help. Now, the sad thing about this is that when we reach out to help for like the medical system, some they shut us down. Like they didn't help you. They told you there was nothing wrong with you.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? This has happened a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I had a moment where I was having auditory hallucinations. I had my executive functioning was turned off.
Wow.
What's that? Can you? I know what it is. About ADHD.
Right. Executive mm-hmm. functioning is where your brain tells you, or your brain helps you to make logical decisions, mm-hmm. Self-control, and being able to
organize information
exactly, mm-hmm. So that you can make an appropriate response. But it, without going into too much detail, it was a very, very severe situation. So I checked myself into the hospital. This was back in, I want to say, 2000 and maybe three. Mm-hmm. And the doctor there was a male, mm-hmm. a black male. And he mm-hmm. said, there's nothing wrong with you. You just have really bad PMS.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So, I stayed there for 3 days. They wanted to give me medication, like antidepressants. I wouldn't take it. And so I, you know, left there and
that was it.
Yeah, that was it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, son.
Yeah, just that particular experience brings me to back to the question you asked about the in between.
Yes.
Right? Because some people are not going to identify with the stream issues. There mm-hmm. are people who maybe have invisible labor going on. That
yes.
labor just not being, you know, just kind of you working yourself until you work yourself till you keep working.
Yes, right.
Basically.
Right.
All these kind of things are just like normalized. So you have the normalized kind of stressors that people could need assistance with. Mm. And then you have the kind of more extreme or more powerful, I like that word, more powerful experiences that require a different type of intervention. Mm. So the in-between to me, for me, because the way I see it, that experience with the doctor is something that happens often.
Yes.
I know it's happened with me.
Okay.
Where I have even removed myself from situations after having a negative experience because I just was like, okay, so that's the whole of the experience. So if this doctor is telling me that there's nothing wrong or this is the only way they could be approached and I don't have any type of agency, mm-hmm. then I'm not going to allow you to be a part of my life because that's a vulnerability. You're opening up to someone to get some help. And so that was actually kind of almost traumatic, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so I didn't have a way to deal with the trauma. I just decided that medication wasn't for me and
right.
neither were psychiatrists.
Right.
Right. From one experience with the male doctor
right.
who put me on an antidepressant, who didn't know or didn't assist me with the fact that I had bipolar. And if mm-hmm. you have bipolar on certain antidepressants, yeah. it will spin you out. It is the opposite of health.
Wow.
And so I was spun out into a suicidal frenzy and could not function. And I knew it was the medication because I researched because I'm that type of person.
Right.
I went and researched, and this particular drug he put me on had been sued specifically by black women and people in my age range because the effect of them had caused them depression and suicide when they never had it.
Wow.
So I talked to him about it and he told me, you can't, I'm the doctor. I have this amount of years of medical school and all you did was read the internet and I don't need any help without respecting authority that doesn't need to be an authority.
Mm.
I don't need any help with that. I already have that pretty good. So,
and I think that's a very, very important part of this conversation
yes.
is making sure that people are empowered enough and have enough confidence in themselves that when they feel that a doctor or any other healthcare professional is mistreating them
yes.
or isn't handling them well,
right.
being able to speak up and say that, being able to ask those questions.
Yes.
And it is unfortunate because there are a lot of people, a lot of mental health professionals, whether they're from the old school or the new school or whatever school they're from,
right.
they can be tremendously dismissive. They've seen a lot of the same patterns
mm-hmm.
and habits show up in people. So mm-hmm. they feel like, oh, well, if you fit this, and criteria, then you can get this
Stamp.
Medication
right.
yeah.
without still understanding, like, okay, they might meet all that criteria,
but
this is still an individual. This
yes.
is still a person, this is still a human. You still need to treat this person like this is a brand new individual person
on,
and not just
yeah.
a number.
Yeah.
And I always, the number one cornerstone of my therapy is empowerment. Wanting to
come
make
on,
sure
Erica.
That I
mm-hmm.
give my clients enough confidence to even
yes.
question me. To
yes,
say, hey,
come through,
beautiful.
Erica James.
You know,
yes.
beautiful.
Finding a new therapist is like finding a new partner.
Yes.
You might
yes.
have to meet with them more
date.
Than once.
Come
through.
Date.
Right.
You might have to take them a few times
yeah.
to
yes.
figure out if they're going to be a fit for you. And
yes.
I always tell my clients that in the very first session, I would love for you to continue to come work with me.
But
if at any time during our practice together,
yes.
if you feel uncomfortable, if there's something that's not working for you, if you want to try something new, please feel free to communicate that to me. And I'll try my best to do what you need. And if I can't give you what you need, then I'll help refer you to somebody who can.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want one experience with me to turn them off from mental health altogether.
There you go.
I want them to continue to seek the support and the help that they need. Another way I like to empower my clients is, I was talking to Sunny about this offline, looking at their community, looking at their support system.
Yes.
At some point, after we've determined that we're a great fit and we've had a few sessions together, who's the most important person in your support system? Bring them into the session, not for a family or group therapy session, but so they can really get a peek into what it's like to live like you live every day. So they can really see what it's like. And then I can give them tools to help them help you. So you're not calling me 8 months down the line.
Yes.
You've been able to develop a really mental health team, a really empowered mental health team, a mental health support system from the people who are already in your natural support system. Empowerment is a big thing for me. And a lot of us, especially coming from historically, we have learned and been taught not to trust doctors, not to trust mental health, not to trust those people in the lab coats with all the letters behind their names. And so part of what I do is try to help flip that around and let them know that we can be part of your team, and here's how we can be part of your team.
Which to me puts you in a revolutionary space.
Thank you.
I mean, it is true. Like,
it
even offline, you were talking about, you know, kind of putting together the spiritual and the science and the art of mental health, which is often a cultural barrier, right? There are practitioners who insist on one or the other and dismiss people who have either both or strongly feel for one or the other, right? And I think the thing that helped me, 16, diagnosed severe depression, hospitalized at 21, and then 32, I self-hospitalized. That was the turning point.
Okay.
But the thing that helped me, and I have to give another shout out, because you gave a shout out to Anana Harris, who is not a mental health professional, but she is definitely, I won't say a healer, but I had a session with her as a friend. She sat me down and she gave me a self-care consultation.
Yes.
Right. And so I had already had experience with how to take care of myself with lifestyle management, right? And then to have the medical interventions.
Right.
And there was this gap in between. So I get this plan, and somebody asked me about my support system. And the last person I told that I had, you know, I couldn't make it to something because I was depressed, might tell me to pray about it, right? And then now they're X'd out of a particular type of support.
Right.
So I would get even more depressed about the support system because I would have to look at the ways I wasn't supported.
Right. Okay.
Or the ways I had to show up in order to get
support. Get something.
And the person who I'm needing support from might need support from me. So she sat me down, and it was very, 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 very simple. And I'm a, you know, thought, you know, thinking that the more thoughts you have, the quicker you might get to the solution. She was like, just go and listen to some music in this environment. I'm like, but I don't want to be around people. And I had all these, like, and she really helped me to really take advantage of, in between the eating the right diet and gardening and, like, the proper support system and being on the right medication, there's all this trial and error. Psychiatrist who doesn't work, who tells you some messed up stuff. I'm keeping it cute for radio. And
we're PG Sunday.
You know, who just all these experiences that the in between, it's kind of like I see it as freedom making almost.
Yes.
Like, cause there are systems that are still in place that keep us thinking that we don't matter. So having that kind of self-care plan, because that's what it was.
Self-care.
Like, I was at the depths of, I was bottom out, right? And I'm thinking that there's nothing I can do aside from one of the things that come with bipolar is the grandiose thinking. So it's either this big plan. I had a plan for the city. I had the plan for, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even have a plan for myself, but I have a plan for everything that's this big. Or it's this kind of like feeling of nothingness.
Yes.
And in between this, like, okay, I'm supposed to eat 3 times a day, but I'm not eating 1 time a day. There's this small baby steps that you can do to take care of yourself. To like, this psychiatrist I really wasn't appreciating, but it doesn't mean I'm going to give up. That's the in between to me.
Yes.
Right? Because that part is where you can get lost. It took me years after having that experience with that psychiatrist to be back in a psychiatrist. Years.
I refuse.
I already would be seen as medication non-compliant.
Yes.
Right? Because of the way I grew up.
I'm not doing it.
I would be because my family came from a family of addiction. And my mother was just like, no aspirins, no Tylenol. We didn't have nothing basic. She made everything, which is amazing. But, you know, like I said before, I was like, can I just get a Tylenol? So I already had that in my head, right? And so the actual fill in the gap was self-care.
Self-care.
I matter enough that when I have, for instance, negative thoughts that come with depression, which is like, I feel like the thing that could keep me, like, I'm already down chemically, right? It's hard for me to get out this bed. Then I'm thinking of all the times where I'm a failure. Like, I'm back here again, and I'm supposed to be, you know, I'm judging myself by my wellness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, which helps me to stay sick.
We're going to come back. I'm just going to say this. I love Sister Kara.
Come on. Come on.
Alliance. I love that. She's like, I'm plugging it in. We're going to come back to that in a minute. But I want people to understand, and Erica touched on it too, your rights as to who can be with you. Who can be with you on this journey clinically, the whole thing. Now, I heard two different sides, which is excellent. That's why today is just so dynamic. Thank you for being here. Kay has a preference or is saying, you know, I did the group thing. The group thing didn't work for me, for me, me being Kay. We're not throwing it out, but for where Kay is and what Kay had to experience and things that were going on, that didn't press the right buttons for her. Right. However, you got your light bulb turned on or your boots knocked when you went in a group. When you went in a group.
Yeah.
Right. Cause he was like, because it was a resounding sound that you had in your head all this time. And everybody in the room was saying the same thing.
Yes.
Now, for those that are listening, you ladies agreed that you have mental wellness opportunities and challenges, but they're different. They're very, very different. Just based on the fact on what it, the bipolarism and the depressions and those type of things.
Yeah.
So it all swings back to Erica, why she's the bomb, because you have it's an individual. It's like, it's no different than a doctor, your primary care, your optometrist, anybody, a lawyer, any one of these professional services that you take time to make sure that is a fit for you. You should not cheat yourself on your health.
For sure.
You should not.
Yes.
She looks good. You should not. You should not cut corners. And so it is a trial and error. You should, if you know enough, we hope that this conversation today empowered somebody. My thing is, if I've touched one, thank you, God, we touch 1,000. So if somebody's listening, know of somebody that has it, that has not come out of the closet with it, because they don't know. Hopefully there's some tools here that you know. If anything else, once that light bulb goes off, have the questions. Have the questions that you need to ask of that person, that's that service care provider, whether it's a counselor, whether it's a psychiatrist, whether it's group. Have expectations on what you need for your breakthrough every day. It's an everyday thing, isn't it, Kay? It's every day. Because some days are better than others. I listen. Some days are better than others. Then it's a moment. Then Kay was sharing, it could be any little thing that just sets us off. We don't know. But own your right to be healthy and to be well,
and also think of it as an investment instead of an expense.
Like
you're investing
tough.
You're investing the time, the money, the research, the time you spend to find the group or to find the therapist or to talk to somebody. That think of it as an investment instead of something that, like, an expense.
It is an expense.
That you're giving away. No, you're investing into your your own health, into yourself.
It's hard though, because when us as color people of color, we so budget. You know, we are paycheck to paycheck. This is real talk, y'all. Yeah. We are paycheck to paycheck. If that person or that entity doesn't pay us, a lot of us don't know what we're going to do. Right. So now we're introducing a whole nother element where I have to get this. I have to get this. What is it going to cost me?
Right.
That's real talk.
That's where we are, right?
That's where we are.
You know, there's a, I came across this organization through a volunteer website whose name is blanking me out. I like to support causes and organizations that support things that I believe in. And I came across a organization called Center for Black Women's Wellness. And I recommended this to a friend of mine who is in mental health therapy. She was looking for some positions. And they have free programs. They're located in, I want to say, Southwest Atlanta. And they have mental wellness programs specifically for women of color. And they're free.
They
group therapy. And it's not group therapy for let's come together and lament. It's let's come together.
That's not your favorite.
No. They come together and they consciously work from a set of tools. In order to strengthen themselves and learn how to self-care, learn how to regulate their emotions, learn how to process stressors in a logical fashion so that it doesn't become a source of anxiety, learn how to build a support system and know who needs to be at their table, identify other people's dysfunction so that they know, okay, that they may not be the person that I need close to me. Definitely. Sitting at my table.
Right. Okay.
Identify triggers for their, identify triggers for them that mm-hmm. can create depression mm-hmm. or emotional overwhelm.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. a group that I joined is, and this was not through CBWW, Center for Black Women's Wellness. It's through a private therapist that I had is dialectical behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I heard. It's a great one.
Cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. And it is about helping people to, as I just said before, identify the issues, identify the triggers. And it's about creating a little magical bag of tools.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. Like literally, mm-hmm. I have experience with DBT and CBT, mm-hmm. The ones that you just mentioned. And some parts of that is creating a bag or a box mm-hmm. of tools, items.
A physical box.
Yeah, physical yep. box. Mm-hmm. Some therapists keep them in the therapy office, which I'm not really sure how that works. Mm-hmm. But I like to actually, we make it in the office, but take it out in your environment. Yeah. Take it out with you. So yeah. when you do feel those triggers, when you know, because some situations come across, you have to face it no matter what. And
yes.
you know it's going to be a trigger for you.
Yes.
But if you have actual tools that you can use, like grab that. So even just seeing that, just seeing the toolbox and not even opening it sometimes is enough to get you through that trigger because you know that the tools are there. Mm. And just thinking of it and seeing it, it's like, okay, I think I can do this without even opening the box. Mm. And then sometimes it's like, actually, I am going to go in that box.
Okay.
Right. And so it right. just, you have really,
because it's dynamic.
It's very dynamic. Yeah. It's very dynamic. It's some changing. Tools like breathing, deep breathing, closing your eyes, things like that. Mindfulness, those are great. But some people actually need, let me pull this stress ball out of this bag. Let me pull this feather out of the bag. Let me pull this crystal quartz or some essential oil or whatever the case may be. Right. Let me have that. I keep those things with me personally to refresh myself and to kind of balance my energy and cleanse my energy.
I know that's right. Yeah.
So really creating a bag or a tool and allowing the client to bring in what's your favorite bag at home, or if you want to go buy a bag and we can create and build a tool bag for you to take with you.
Kay, did you have any other sites or places that could help people?
Circling back to empowering yourself with who you choose to be your professional, mm-hmm. I think NAMI, National Association for Mental, is it mental illness?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which they need to change their name.
They need to change the name.
But they've got a questionnaire, and I think this is, you can Google this, how to find a therapist that mm-hmm. suits you.
Okay.
And there's a series of questions that you can ask. And also, if you go in and you have a, not just a therapist, but a psychiatrist mm-hmm. even, and you walk in and after 30 minutes, 15 minutes, they have a diagnosis, they are not the one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. I mean, it takes, hours of conversation. When I went to Emory, it was a 2-hour assessment and they had a full questionnaire.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just one of those, you know, you walk into the office mm-hmm. and there's 10, 15 mm-hmm. questions.
Mm-hmm.
This was, it took 2 hours.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's, in a conversation as well. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your history.
Yep.
And, you know, interview with the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To come, because this is very serious.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
huge.
Yeah, it's huge.
You know, you can't just give somebody a diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, anxiety or depression or just, anxiety, depression, you give them anti-anxiety pills and uppers, which is mm-hmm. antidepressant, and it can make their matter worse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can create a greater sense of depression.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or a greater sense of suicidal thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone like me, I don't need to be on it.
Yeah.
You know, certain antidepressants. You know, I am on an antidepressant. It's very mild. It's like the lowest milligrams of it.
Yeah.
But it helps for when I do have those moments of like, oh my God, you know, life. What is life? Life is overrated.
I have a few too.
Come on, Sunny.
And I think they're already pulled up. So one is, if you're looking for a therapist, Erica James already has her website.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then also if you have a certain type of insurance, mm-hmm. if you want to fine by race, mm-hmm. fine by belief system, fine yes. by therapeutic experience. Psychology yeah, Today psychology is the one I
use. Awesome.
It's literally you put in, it has like, I don't know, almost 100 different things you could filter
good.
For.
That's
right?
good.
And so you don't have to worry, like, is this my insurance carries
mm-hmm. right.
the area?
That's what somebody was thinking right yeah. now. Thank you.
Right. The gender, the, yes. you know, without yes. it being. So yep. you have that. Mm-hmm. There is this place called the Peer Wellness Center in Decatur. And people do not know about this. Like, a number of people don't know about this. It is a center underneath the Georgia Mental Health Consumer Network, mm-hmm. which is where I got my training to Look do the that. Work in the mental health field. This is, Go, it looks like mm-hmm. a house. It's a residential setting. Mm-hmm. But what happens there, let's say that you're feeling, you know, me and Kay are relating on so many different the kind of experiences of walking this journey.
Right.
And you don't feel like you need to be hospitalized, but you also don't feel, you might feel like you want to be stabilized or you might feel like you need right. a break.
Good,
this
good
is
word.
A week. You can spend a week in this residential, kind of like it's a resortish yes. thing. One wow. of the rooms actually has a jacuzzi.
Yes.
And you go in here, right? It's literally off across, it's maybe about 5 blocks from Avondale train station.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And so it looks really wooded. You go in here, it's beautiful on the inside, like beautiful on the inside. And for 1 week, they give you a stipend. They take you to the grocery store, all free. Mm-hmm. They take you to the grocery store, you get whatever you want to. Mm-hmm. You go in and out as you please. You have to be back at 2 a.m.
Oh, wow.
And you have your own room. They have they have come on now,
we're learning,
like,
come
Erica's like, right? I'm like, I'm like,
they have classes and wellness activities every day who are led by people who also have challenges but who are trained to, you know, awesome. You could ask for, hey, let's talk, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I can't sleep, and they'll talk with you, you know. Creative activities, housing assistance, all that. And that's a week. And you can also go there every single day. It's on there. What's between 10 and 6 every 7 days a week. If you, the service I'm talking about is called Respite, mm-hmm. and it's for a week, right? Mm-hmm. But only thing that you need to do is identify as a person who has any challenges. It's no big paperwork. You know, it's not mm-hmm. a hospital. Wow. They make sure they're very clear. The difference between them and NAMI, because it's both organizations that I'm a part of, is NAMI kind of has a very formal, like, support groups. Mm-hmm. Like, this is more like, come on in. you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Wow. So I think that's important. Another one that you were talking about if you want a person who you may have, who already maybe knows or doesn't know who wants to tell their story, is Respect Institute.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they take you through a formal process, and if you are a mental health professional, you can actually have them come in and do a whole session.
Mm.
And it really empowers oh, wow. people, because it's a formal process, and at the end you graduate by telling your story.
Wow.
Okay. And so people, I have been both through it and also a trainer, and to watch the actual difference from somebody who comes in at the beginning and empowers themselves with the same details, right? How you interact with the details of happening, but you're telling it in an empowering way,
mm-hmm.
is like they literally become a different person.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And can you repeat that? What is that?
The Respect Institute.
The Respect Institute.
The Respect Institute.
And give us some love on Sister Care.
Okay, so this is my favorite, right? Because this literally was the life-changing. Hey, Anana. This was the life-changing moment for me, because I've been diagnosed with 16, since 16, so I've had times where I'm really, you know, practicing good options for myself, mm-hmm. and times where I'm just completely out of any field of treatment or coping skills.
Non-compliant.
That's the word I like to use.
Years, right? Mm-hmm. And so the thing about this is that it's so personal. Like, the self-care session I had was so it was so helpful to me, because it was literally the tool that got me to converge the two,
mm-hmm.
and have less gaps between, like, if I'm having a moment where neither one of those are options, I don't have to beat up on myself because I'm not doing all the right things, mm-hmm. and taking care of myself. Because there's a lot of judgment for
yes.
me,
oh, yes.
that comes
oh, yeah.
to how am I taking care of myself? Because as an adult, you're supposed to be functioning a certain kind of way, especially you have responsibilities. And if you don't feel like you're, you know, then you know there's consequences. So that right. was the thing. So it comes back to guilt and shame. So the Sister Care Alliance, the great thing about this organization, for anybody, we're doing a membership drive. So I suggest they go to sistercarealliance.org. And you also can email sistercarealliance@gmail.com. So Sister Care, like it sounds, Sister C-A-R-E Alliance. And so the thing that helped me was that it puts together activism, social mm-hmm. activism, and taking care of yourself.
Awesome.
Right? We were a part of, Anana was one of the major organizers for the Mama Day bailout, which helped black women,
yep.
right? A lot of people mm-hmm. already know about
yep.
that. Black yep. women on Mother's Day
mm-hmm.
get out of jail.
Yep.
To be bonded out, right?
It was awesome. That was beautiful.
A major organizer wow. around
it was
that.
A beautiful day.
Wow. And everybody is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Right? And everybody who's a member of the Sister Care Alliance is in some ways, you know, doing some kind of social activism. Yes. But there are organizations I've been a part of where the people who are doing organizing are run down. Mm-hmm. Just like the nurses. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You'll mm-hmm. see some nurses who are like in worse health than the patients mm-hmm. they're serving. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so the difference in this organization is that you have to take care of yourself.
Oh, you right? have
it
to.
It is a yeah. mandatory thing. And it's not abusive. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because sometimes it's like accountability
yeah.
for taking care of yourself. Like, oh, do you have all your support system? You feel worse than, you right. know, right. together.
Right. Right.
Three times a day, it's mm-hmm. all this kind of judgment. The simplest way I could kind of put it is that the question that we ask each other is, how is your self-care going?
Mm-hmm.
Which has a different energy
yes.
than, are you doing the things you're supposed to right. do to
right.
take care of yourself?
Right.
And
right.
then you can ask for help. It's kind of this breakdown of categories: social, educational, artistic, physical, emotional, spiritual, economic.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask in each category, you say, what do I need today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's literally revolutionary.
There you go.
It's putting together the people who are a lot of times doing the most work, who are sometimes the least visible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I just wanted to shout that out because I think that's just an important thing. If you're interested, if it focuses on women of color, mm-hmm. In this area. So that's just an awesome
that's
research.
Awesome.
And that was what was life changing to me.
That helped you. Mm-hmm. Erica, yes. Tell the people, beautiful woman, what tools that they need, what they can get, and how can they get with you?
So I think in addition to the resource that you guys listed, another one is sometimes if you do have health insurance,
mm-hmm.
going to the website of your health insurance provider and
yes.
seeing what mental health providers they work with. That's mm-hmm. one way to start. Another thing to do, if you have children in school, sometimes schools can help you get the resources that you need.
Mm-hmm.
They know a lot about the mental health care providers in the area and the neighborhood that you live in.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that's overlooked. People don't really think that much about that. But the school system can kind of help provide a list of resources for you as well. To get in touch with me, you can go to my website, which is www.ejcounselingatl.com. There you can hear about all of my services. I offer many different types of therapy. They also come in many different price points,
mm-hmm.
Because I don't want people's, you know, financial experiences to
mm-hmm.
be a border to their mental health care.
Awesome.
I also have an ebook on my website
hey.
Called The Self-Care Plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about practical ways people can have self-care. Just, it's also helping them identify that some of the things they're already doing is actually self-care,
mm-hmm.
but just being aware of that and recognizing
right,
that.
Right, right.
The small things, I brushed my teeth today, that's
mm-hmm.
self-care.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, depending on where they are in their journey, that's a huge thing.
That's huge.
So really helping them identify those things and give themselves credit for the self-care they're already doing.
Mm-hmm.
I also have what's called the Journal Journey, which is a free resource. You can sign up for it, and every week you'll get a new topic to journal about.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, each month is a different theme. So for the month of July, the theme will be anxiety.
Okay.
So each week you'll get a new topic to journal about anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think journaling is a great way to kind of help you work through some of the challenges you're
wow.
going through, especially if you can't get connected to formal mental health, just writing in your journal, and it's completely free. And
mm-hmm.
every week you'll get a new topic emailed to you. So yeah, that's the ways you can contact me. You can also email me at contact@ejcounselingatl.com.
And you're on the gram too.
I'm on Instagram.
Yes, ma'am.
My Instagram page is ejcounselingatl.
Yes, she's on the
yes.
gram. I like her on the gram.
Yes, thank you.
You know what? This was very empowering.
Yes.
There was a lot of notes being taken.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome when you can sit with women, people that are informed, and you get something from it. That's what it was all about. My hope today is that we as people, as people can see, I'm a woman of color. I'm not changing. I'm not bleaching this.
Nope.
This is what you get. As a woman of color, I want to do whatever I can to help our people. I want to help all women, of course, but I hope that what you heard today resonated with you. These ladies were transparent. They were passionate about this. It is their journey. They own it. If you know somebody that is dealing with mental wellness or dealing with mental health opportunities or challenges, please reach out to me. If you don't remember anybody else's name at this table, reach out to me and we will be sure to get you the tools that you need
mm-hmm.
to start your road for empowerment so you can enjoy this thing called life the best way you possibly can.
Right.
That is my time for today. I must go. But in all things that you do, I want to thank my guests. Thank you, beautiful ladies. Thank you. You guys continue to rock on. We hope you enjoyed listening to RCR Presents Real Discussions.
Until next time, you take care and continue to rock on.